First off, I have to apologize for the late release of this episode. It's very much not like me. I am generally known among my coworkers and friends as someone who gets things done. But to be honest, this time when it was my turn to edit, my heart just hasn't been in it. I can attribute this to two different reasons. The first of which is a piece of momentous news that will be delivered later in this podcast. The second is that my relationship with the game of golf has been a little shaky lately. My swing is not where I'd like it to be, my scores seem to be creeping upwards, even my putter, Captain Spock, has been illogically unreliable as of late. And I can't help wondering as I ponder these events if the two causes aren't connected. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
All right, welcome to another For the Record. Today we have a handicap update, a talk nerdy to me, some summertime talk, a little news from me, and a birdie bev.
Is summer talk like similar to pillow talk?
Summer talk.
Do do do.
Do 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 do.
Whisper sweet, warm things in your ear.
Meow. All right, well, jumping right into it. Handicapped update. How are we doing? What are your swing thoughts, and what's new? What needs improvement?
My swing thought is hit the ball.
Yeah, Cody's a little bit on the struggle bus right now. I'm gonna empathize with him. I've been there. It's not fun.
We've all been there. I don't know. Today's round, we opted to scramble. I didn't have any really terrible shots. I had some that were not great, but the first hole was really bad, but it was bad for everybody.
Yeah,
it's true.
After that, I feel like it was okay. But yeah, last week I went with Eric and I couldn't even hit the ball.
Not with your driver.
What am I doing out here?
The rest of it you did okay, but your driver was pretty cold.
Yeah, I feel like Katy Perry. I'm hot, then I'm cold. I'm yes, then I'm no.
What's your handicap right now?
22.3.
Is that up or down from the beginning of the season?
It is up 0.1.
Okay. Good
and
to know.
I dropped some really good scores for some decent scores, but not as good. So yeah, my swing thought is hit the ball. Actually, it's course control. If we're talking, if my serious swing thought is keeping it in play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, my handicap has gone up just by a point. But yeah. I feel like my irons and my chipping and putting is actually in a really good spot.
Yeah.
It's my drive has just been letting me down.
Nice.
Eric? For me, my handicap is exactly the same that it has been, 30.5. That's what I will always be.
I'm no good. I'm never going to get any better.
It's been 3 years, a 30.5. I guess that's just what I'm going to accept. So for me, my driver has been warming up a bit. I've been getting some pretty good drives. There's some miss hits now and again, but overall I'm pretty happy with my driver. My irons are doing just fine. I said the same thing last year, my wedges, I can't get the feel. Anything that isn't a full swing, I don't know how hard to hit it. I hit it long, I hit it short. My putting's been doing
that.
Yeah, my putting, I listened to a thing about, you know, instead of trying to get it past the hole and getting it really tight, like try and get it within, you know, a 3 foot radius of any part of the hole. And that has really helped me. I feel like I had some really great putts today. Last week I got the putter guys. Like I've had the putter guys since I thought that thought.
Yeah. The vengeance was doing well for you today.
Yeah. And it's been really helping. But I need help with the wedges and I don't know how to do it.
Eric almost canned like a 25 footer, like a super slippery 25 footer downhill, and it missed by millimeters.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
Such a good putt.
Cody did get a solo bird today on a par three.
He did.
Within like 12 inches.
It was less than a foot. Yeah.
It was a tap in, which was fantastic. What's really funny about that, I don't want to detract from it. It was magnificent. We know that that hole you can miss left and the hill will kick it onto the green.
Yeah.
I understand you missed it quite left.
It wasn't quite left. Not it was just a little left.
It was just there's off just
a little mound.
Yeah.
And so it went to the left.
And then and kicked on to within a foot. Which but we didn't great. See
it. It looked like so it hit. Yeah, go ahead.
It disappeared past that mound that's in front. Uh-huh. That's just to the left. So we thought that, you know, usually you can see it bounce and then, you know, a dramatic bounce on the green, which is what Eric's did.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that. We saw it move a little left and then just disappear.
And it took a really long time.
Yeah. And so I assumed that it was just stuck in the rough on the side of the hill or something. And then as you were walking up to the tee box, I'm just sitting there watching it. And I see this cute little ball roll up right next to the flag. And I went...
Yeah,
I would have been. I mean, I would have been very happy for you if that had gone in the hole, but I also would have been kind of ticked off because I had to zip to the restroom really fast. I do not want Cody's story to be the old man Sorensen missed it because he was in the bathroom. I don't need that to be a story forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, John Paul?
So my current handicap is a 19.6. It was a 19.6 at the beginning of the year. I got it down to a 19.3, and then it went back up to a 19.6. So it's unchanged as well. But I'm on a good trajectory right now because I have two swing thoughts that I'm working on. I have two things that I'm working on in my game. Number one is tempo, and I was talking with Eric about this earlier. When I can make myself have a nice, smooth tempo, I'm consistent. Like, I can make good contact with the ball. I still have some face control problems, so I'll push them a little bit right or I'll tug them a little bit left. But I'm making contact, and the distance is pretty reliable for me. The problem is that I have a tendency, and maybe somebody can empathize with this, when I'm in my backswing at the very, very top, right as I go into my transition, I can't make myself transition the same way when the ball's there. When I know I'm going to make a contact with it, then I can when I know I'm not hitting the ball and I'm just swinging through. So when I'm doing a practice stroke, I'm very good about swinging through the ball and having a nice smooth action. When the ball's down there, something happens and it makes me a little bit quick on transition. And
your brain goes, swing!
Exactly. And I try to force it and it causes two problems. Number one, it'll make my hands get too far ahead. So my hands will get a and I won't release the club properly, which causes me to push the ball quite badly right. So that causes that toey right punch. Or I'll catch it thin. I'll just fall back a little bit because of the speed, and I'll catch it thin. So I've caught quite a few thin. That's my only miss right now. So the swing thought's very strong. Tempo, tempo, tempo. Just a smooth swing.
And I think...
And it's been very successful for me so far.
I think part of the problem is a course that we play. It has one dog leg right. All of them are left. And so if you miss left or miss to the right, it's almost always trouble and very difficult to recover from. So it's just not doing you any favors.
Very interesting because I've been a fader of the golf ball my whole golfing career until I started golfing this course regularly. And it has forced me to become a drawer of the golf ball. And so I draw. The problem is that then that miss when I turn it over, it's a duck hook left, and it's bad. So I've gotten rid of the right. I really don't miss right very often, but when my left misses, significant.
I think there's definitely something about tempo, though, because I was telling you today that I don't mind pulling up my longer irons. Usually, the long like the 5-iron can be really scary for a lot of golfers.
Yeah,
and I have been pulling it out more often when I have like 190 out because I've been able to hit it so well lately.
Yeah.
And I attribute it completely to a pause at the very top of my backswing.
Sure.
Like I backswing and then I pause and then I come through. And I probably need to do that for all of my irons, but I know that it's in my head that I take extra time.
Have you tried it with your driver?
No, because our driving range is closed.
And he needs to work that out. I'll tell you, I have exactly the opposite reaction when it comes to my long irons. I don't know why I have a 5 and a 6 iron. They go the same distance as my 7 iron. But what it is that I know the physics behind those clubs. So I've got that 7 wood and that 5 wood. And I can swing easy at that 5 wood and swing easy at that 7 wood. It gets plenty high in the air. It goes about the same distance as my 6 iron and my 5 iron. The problem is I know the physics on a 5 iron particularly, that you have to have club head speed for it to get in the air. Mm. Like, it's no different from a 7-iron if you don't hit it with significant speed. So every time I get to the top of my backswing with that stupid 5-iron, I try to give it a little extra because I know it's got to go fast. Mm. And I know I'm doing it, and I can't make myself not do it. And I overswing it, and I catch it thin, and I top it or blade it. And it's never, I mean, I don't miss the ball.
And that's
but
why
it's
you,
never good.
Well, and that's why you always go to your golden.
And that's why I go to the 7 or the, yeah, the 5.
Golden ladies.
Well, I think that's why those clubs are becoming really popular, sure. Right? The 7 woods, like, they're all over. It's all the rage.
That having been said, I will say that if I had the club head speed, I think a 5-iron's way easier to hit than a 7 wood. The contact spot on the club itself is very small on a 7 wood. A 7 wood's head is quite small.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of forgiveness on the toe or the heel. I feel like a 5-iron is actually a bigger striking area.
Yeah.
But
and that's kind of why
head, I just that swippy shaft and the extra length, I just know I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of why I don't mind pulling out a longer iron, cuz I feel confident with my irons right now, and that's just another iron in my head. I get a little bit nervous pulling out like a 4 hybrid or even my 5 wood, because I know it'll get the distance.
Yeah.
But the dispersion is going to be so much
wider.
It'll be
way tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing that I'm working on, I said I have two things. I'm working on tempo. The other thing that I'm working on is a major change.
You have a Ford
change.
Tempo? Do they make those anymore?
I had a Ford Tempo for years.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
No.
When my wife and I got married, I drove a Ford Tempo, and she had driven a Ford Tempo previously, so we both had Tempos.
You were Tempo buddies?
She had gotten rid of her Tempo before I got mine, but her mom was still driving a Tempo at the time, so there were 3 Tempos potentially in the family. And we joked because my Tempo was red, and I had converted it from an automatic to a manual. So I did a DIY manual conversion on mine because the transmission lost its second gear. So I put a manual in it and Frankenstein that sucker. And she still jokes that I married her for the money because she had a 401k from her job, which helped us buy our first house. And she married me for the car because it was red and a manual, so presumably it was fast. At the time, she was driving a Saturn SL2, which was twice as fast as the Tempo, but the Tempo was red.
So it's so got to be fast. Yeah. Did the Tempo have a nickname, by the way?
Yeah, it was the Tempo.
Okay, great. Yeah. Sorry, that's completely tangent. Back on your Tempo comment.
So Tempo's the one thought. The other thought is I'm working on putting. And I talked a little bit about this earlier off air, but this is a major change for me. I have really terrible eyesight. I have a bad astigmatism. I've talked about this on the pod before. Reading greens is a challenge for me. But it's worse when I'm standing over the ball because I'm looking out of the side of the lens.
And they're curved just enough.
And it's curved enough that I have the hardest time like trusting a line. And so I'm notorious for changing the line at the last minute and then just completely missing it.
Case in point today on 18.
Absolutely.
I walked up. And I was going to like, okay, I was aimed probably a foot and a half to the high on the hole, to the left of the hole.
Yeah.
And John Paul's like, it's not going to break that much. What are you doing?
Hey, we all missed that on the high side by an inch. We all missed it on the high side.
But if you hadn't seen it at first, you would have been like, what the?
So what I've done is I've done the one of the things that actually drove me crazy about people is I've gone to aligning my golf ball and actually putting a line. And that way, when I'm standing over the ball, I'm not thinking about the line. I have already committed to the line. Then I'm using 100% of my focus on pace.
Is it hard to do that mentally? Because for me, when I'm standing over the ball and I look at it, I have kind of like that.
It's getting easier.
I have that like video game where like I see the line. Yep. I draw it with my head.
It's getting easier. And I wish I could do that. I've tried that for years and I'm just not good at it. So the alignment comes with 2 changes. Number one, it's a slower pre-putting routine, which I'm conscious about. So I'm working on trying to make it faster because my fine motor control isn't great. So actually getting the golf ball to line up where I think it's going to and getting that teeny tiny line adjusted on the intended line, that's more tricky than I thought it was going to be. So that's hard. The second part of it that's tricky is that I'm just conscious about being a fast player. And that just takes time. And so I'm working on trying to trim down the time. But I will say that I have gotten the puttergeist every single time since I switched to it. And I will say that I'm just more committed to my putt when I stand over to it and paying that much attention to pace. I'm not leaving them way short and I'm not pounding them way long. I've left a few a little short, and I've hit a few through the break, but it's not nearly as bad as it used to be.
So I'm curious if you think you can attribute that to a combination of your whole routine or the fact that you're now just being conscious of putting.
I don't know how to disaggregate that.
But no, I would say it's better because before he'd walk up.
It's definitely better.
I'm saying it's definitely his routine because before we'd walk up and he was so wishy-washy and we'd be like, oh, we're reading it this way. And you'd be like, I don't see it that way. You'd go to line up the putt
over the ball.
Yeah, you'd change it like two or three times. Yep. And then you'd miss and be like, ah, should I trust it? It's like, yeah, just trust it.
So when you stand over it and you have your line, you know, the stripey stripes pointed a certain way, I think it would be really hard for me to not stand over it and be like, I want to hit it over here.
It's the most difficult part about doing it. And I just have to tell myself, nope, you've lined it up.
Yep.
Trust the line. Focus on the pace.
That would be
hard
for me.
And if you've got the pace right, that's the funny thing about golf. You can have the line quite wrong. If you have the pace right, you're never going to be far away.
No.
Yeah.
But, and we have some tricky greens, and so it can get away from you quick, but I think it's been much better. The other major change that comes from this, though, is that I've golfed the Pro V1 or the Pro V1X for a long time. That's been my go-to golf ball for ages, and then I play the Kirkland as my backup ball. I am currently playing last year's TP5X.
Yeah.
With the huge lines on it because the lining up that big old stripey golf ball is so much easier than the little Pro V1 line. It's so much more visual, and I can see it when it's rolling on the green, know if I've pushed it, know if I've pulled it. And I have to say, objectively, it's a tiny bit squirrelier off the tee, but the short game feel on those TP5Xs is great.
Yeah.
It's a nice ball around the green. It's got good feel. It feels nice off the putter face.
Yeah.
And so I feel like whatever I've lost from the short, I don't feel like there's enough of a difference in control on it that I feel like I've massively downgraded, but that alignment aid is worth all the trade for me.
Yeah.
So I've been using the TP5Xs for several years.
Yes.
Back to the point when, I don't know if you guys remember when I used to use the high vis yellow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were still TP5Xs. Like it's been that long since I've been using them consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I am a big fan.
It's a good ball. It's a really good ball.
And I was able to test them. I'm part of their survey group. And so they sent a few out and I was able to test them.
Well, and you're the problem because you got that exact ball that I just bought and you had some and I just was dinking around with them on the green before the round. And I was like, that feels nice off the putter. Like I was expecting it not to feel good. And I loved the line on it. And I was like, I've been talking about going to that lineup thing for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm just going to buy a box of them and try it.
Wait, it's $25 cheaper than a Pro V1?
Well, if you can get last gens on a sale, they are. I should have bought more when I did it.
So,
here's the drawback and here's the major
your
downside. Your
ploy sending those out worked.
I have to play that ball. I can't have a cheap backup ball because it's part of my routine. And so now I'm committed to those and I have to play them for every hole.
It's cheaper to swallow. We don't lose as many balls anymore.
We don't. No.
And that alone is a huge boon to our self-esteem.
Sure.
Eric says, well, we don't lose many nearly as much as we used to.
I'm just a little bitter because the last two rounds I've lost balls in the fairway.
I want to talk about that later, but here's the deal. Like when we talk about not losing golf balls, it isn't that we don't lose golf balls, people, but last week on a 9-hole round, I lost two. And I was furious. Like, I haven't lost two balls on a round in a long time. And I remember...
Every once in a while, we'll have a
When I was a beginning golfer, like years ago, when I was using just whatever cheap golf ball I could find, it was not uncommon for me to lose, like, a lot of golf balls. And back then, I used to hunt golf balls when I was doing...
Oh, yeah.
And so I counted my day as whether I found more than I lost. Oh. Right? That was whether I considered a good day of golf, whether I found more than I lost. But I'm thinking back, like on a 9-hole round, I would probably lose three or four every time.
Yeah.
And the fact that I can generally go two or three rounds on a golf ball now.
Yeah, that's true.
Is a big deal.
I would say about the same.
Previous season TP5X 12 right now for the stripe on Amazon's $45.
I know. And I need to buy a couple boxes and put them in the basement because that's not their normal price. Normally they're $55.
And they're not
going to
stay like that.
And the Pro V1Xs are $59.
I mean, all of
them
are. The whites, the yellows, they're all $45.
Yep.
Yeah. So TaylorMade, your survey group sending out a trial, you've sold at least a couple of us.
You got two customers who are paying customers who are now bragging on a widely distributed podcast that Listen they don't me. Lose golf balls, so you'll get no business from us. So anyway, that's my change. I'm hoping it pays dividends. So far, the putting has been much better. I think if I can get my ball striking a tiny bit sharper and focus on that. But I feel I'm on the cusp because last week, or 2 weeks ago when we played, I did not have my best stuff. Mm. And I was still able to pull out a 46. That's with two triple bogeys. I pulled out a 46.
So since we're still kind of on the golf update section, I'll tell you guys, I told you a little bit off air, but to our listeners, I went down and played a round in Arizona with my brothers, and we played a pretty fun course, and I didn't have any of my equipment. I just kind of borrowed my brother's clubs. I think I used his wife's on half of the holes.
Oh yeah.
I just had my regular shoes and everything. None of your own equipment. And on the front nine, I shot a 47.
Excellent.
Yeah. I kind of blew up. So I'm going to say about hole 14 is when the heat hit us and caught up. So get this. We teed off, like our tee time was at 9:15, and we got there about 8:45, and they're like, oh, there you are. You must be our last group for the day.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
What?
Last group of the Welcome day to at Phoenix. 9:15. Yeah, seriously.
In the morning?
Yeah. Wow. 9:15 a.m. was the last teen group.
If you go out at like 11:30 in Phoenix, you will die before you get to the 18th hole.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. About hole 13, 14, right in that range, the heat caught up because I was feeling really good until then, and it was just a slog. So it was really tough finishing that back nine. So I think I ended up with like a 53 on the back nine after just completely melting down in 100 plus degree weather. I just have this image,
like, you know, in the old cartoons, like the old Looney Tunes cartoons where extreme things would happen to the characters and they somehow survived. I just have this image of Cody literally melting on the course.
So last year... 2 years ago, I guess, man, I was at a work trip in Phoenix, and the place that they had it had a golf resort as part of it, and a water park. And there were golfers like towards the end of the day when it was really hot that we'd see them like walking, and they'd just walk into the water park and jump in the lazy river for a sec and then jump back out and keep going
just
to play.
In their golf gear. Just like,
yeah.
I believe it. But my point of this story, besides the little update, it was a good round. I loved playing with my brothers and it was good to spend time with them. But I didn't have any of my stuff and not my best game, and I shot a 47.
Yeah.
Like, there's definite improvement.
Maybe we should take your equipment away more often.
I think there's one particular piece of equipment that John Paul and I would both be interested to see you try differently.
What's that?
Are you thinking the same thing?
I don't know.
Let's hear.
What are you thinking?
There's a particular piece of equipment of his that we both dislike.
Well, now I want to know.
His driver.
Yeah. Neither one of us like your driver.
That's fine.
Yeah. Love your driver. We
you,
hate
you
your
love
driver.
It. I feel like if you your driver is not particularly forgiving.
I like my driver. I don't know if I love it, but I like it.
Yeah.
I think if you tried out a different driver, like, I would be interested to see what you come across.
Yeah, maybe. It is my newest club, besides from the wedge that you guys got me.
Yeah,
I was going
to
say no.
And
it's
I'm
not
saying
you
need to
club.
Replace it immediately. I'm just
no.
saying.
No. And I will say if anybody wanted to throw like a new ping my way, as a friend of the show, then obviously I'm never going to complain.
Here's what I'm going to say, because I'm
if you'd like to
them,
randomly sponsor us all.
As has been stated on this cast, I play the latest generation of Ping driver, and I play the Max, the forgiving one.
Yeah.
It's stupidly forgiving. I can darn near miss the golf ball,
well. You hit the ground and bounced off the ground and hit the ball and still...
And still 200 yards down the center of the fairway. Yeah. Like, it's so insanely forgiving. It's almost like cheating. That club is so good.
Let's see. How long have I had my club?
Long enough to justify a new one.
Yeah, because my driver, I've had it for 3 years.
I think I think you should go get fit.
Are we calling the life cycle of a driver now, three years?
He bought it secondhand and it's not fitted for
him. No, it wasn't secondhand. It's new.
It was new, but it was a gen old.
Yeah. No, it was a couple gen old.
So it's a 5 year old driver. So I'd be interested in hitting a new one to see what the difference is.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to go get a fitting and just see what they have to say.
If I'm doing a fitting, it's probably going to be for my irons.
You could do a full bag.
I think
I don't have that kind of cash.
I don't believe you.
I think you do irons.
Now, if you don't want to spend that kind of cash, that's different.
I think you do irons before your driver because your driver's not bad. But and I really do. You have the TaylorMade M4. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that's a great driver.
And that's, it's the re-release of the M4.
Yeah, it's a it's a legendarily good driver.
I love that driver. I really do.
Your irons, on the other hand, are not good.
They're not good for him.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, the guy that I talked to, there's a guy on Reddit that he's great, but I was like, are these good for a beginner? And he's like, sure, why not? I feel like he just didn't really care.
I feel like if I put my irons in your bag tomorrow, you're gaining 2 or 3 strokes around.
Yeah, maybe.
Could put that to the test.
Yeah.
Good.
Go buy yourself some new irons. I'll take yours.
No, I think not.
Well, on that bombshell, I think it's time to...
Talk nerdy to me!
Woohoo! This is a fun one. We talked a little bit about this offline. So last episode, we talked about franchises that need that are worthy of a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also talked about a little bit of crossover. And John Paul had Eric and I over to his house to watch... The Black Hole.
I must say, I've thought about that movie a lot since we watched it.
Yeah, it sticks with you.
So, that movie, I have no idea how it ever got released.
I know. Oh. It's such a mess. Yeah. It is a mess.
It is like somebody, a group of high school kids, and they all have this giant project that they have to do at the end of the year. And everybody worked on it independently and got together the morning of their presentation and they all spliced in their individual pieces.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it feels like. It's very disjointed. It was thematically confusing. It was
like the, I don't know what you call them, the post-quills, the 3 final Star Wars movies.
Sure.
If you watched them all, like cut out about 6 hours and smashed it all together, that's about what it is.
You know what though? But I stand by what I said last time we were on the pod. It's got bones. There's a lot there. Like
really good concepts.
Like if you wanted to go, like there's thin some
bones.
Good
thin bones.
I think the problem is that and we watched a little documentary afterwards about why it's so bad. But I think one faction was trying to drag it darker and deeper, and the other faction was trying to make it happier and funnier because it was a Disney movie, and it's the not knowing where it's going that makes it so confusing and hard to watch. And then the ending is totally unhinged. Yeah. But you could go in either of those two directions as long as you commit to one of them and it would be good.
Well,
like Maximilian versus Vincent. I'll pay to see that all day. That's great content. Or the deep, dark craziness of Reinhardt. I'll pay to see that all day. Just don't put it in the same space.
Yeah. They could have pulled it back a little.
Sure.
Because, I mean, the ending is way out of left field.
You hear of movies today how they do reshoots quite often when they need to reassess something. I think the biggest one of relatively recent memory that I can think of, and this is a while back, but like the Solo movie, where they were like 3/4 of the way done, and then they said, no, current director's fired. We're bringing in...
What's
his bucket?
Ron Howard.
Ron Howard. And he did what he could, but you could tell that there was...
You could tell it was not a Ron Howard movie. Sure.
And it just felt very disjointed. Anyway, all of that to say, it was fun watching a movie with you guys, and it was more fun laughing at it while we were watching it. But along those lines, back to our talk nerdy to me, that was a movie that, you know, in your eyes... You're like, you know it's a terrible movie, but you liked it.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about the question, what is a sleeper movie that was better than you expected it to be?
a movie that you had no expectations
zero
for
expectations
you,
for
and you loved it
and it ended up being way better than you thought
there's
it
some
was going to
there's
be.
Some good examples there. This is a deep well.
Yeah,
Eric, what you got for us?
The one that comes to mind the quickest is the first Mario movie. Because when I saw the preview...
That's a terrible movie!
No, he's talking about the most recent Mario's,
one.
The animated
Because they have had two.
I thought you were talking about the Super Mario Bros.
No, that movie is awful.
No, that, yeah, not that one.
Like,
no.
That is terrible. No. Okay, the Super Mario movie made by Illumination Studios. Yeah.
Because when I saw it, I was like, Chris Pratt as Mario? And like I listened to the names and I was like,
going for stars,
yeah.
You know?
And I was like, I don't know. I really wasn't sold. And then I went and saw it, and I was like, this isn't a great movie, but it's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
Sure.
I enjoyed it. I think the second one's equally as fun.
Yeah.
One of my favorite recent examples was the latest Dungeons & Dragons movie, because I had zero expectations
because
for that.
Because every Dungeons & Dragons movie
has been
awful, terrible.
And I was like, somebody told me, no, you got to go see it. It's really good. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's a Dungeons & Dragons movie. It was so stupid. I grinned like an idiot through that whole movie. It's one of my favorite rewatches. It's so good.
Another one that I had no expectations from was Onward.
That's one of your favorite movies.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it happened, part of it's because it came out right after my dad died.
Yeah, it would touch those chords for sure. Yeah.
So yeah, my family's watching and they're like, oh, that's a fun movie, and I'm over there just crying my eyes
so
out.
Beautiful. Like, oh, my dad.
You know, another huge one for me that really surprised me was the Steve Carell Get Smart movie.
Oh, the James Bond kind of vibes.
I had no expectations. I thought that movie was going to be incredibly stupid. I'm like, really, Steve Carell? And I liked Get Smart when I was a kid. And oh my gosh, it's so good. And it's such a good rewatch. Like, like everybody in it is 100% committed. And they all bought into the bit and played it hard. And it's very enjoyable.
Another one with actors, two of them, that I was like, I don't. Stranger Than Fiction, I was like,
"Yep, that's in my top 10
movies
of all
time." Yeah, that one's an amazing
movie.
And
I love that movie.
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Oh, yeah. That is a bit out of Ben Stiller's
element. Ben Stiller, I was like, oh, he's going to be a comedian. And then I watched it, and I was like, man, this movie is beautiful.
So I don't know if this counts because it's generally well-loved, but I wasn't sure what to think of The Fifth Element.
Oh,
my gosh. Visually, it's such a great movie.
Visually, yeah.
And I like the story and everything involved with it, too.
Do you know Do you know what impressed me the most about that movie when I first saw it? The editing is so creative. Like when they cut back and forth between different people and the little quippy lines of dialogue, it was so unusual at the time. Now it's much more common.
Yeah. Multipass.
Well, and Gary Oldman as the bad guy, he does such a good job.
Is there a movie in which he's not awesome? Is there a single thing that man has ever done that's not top tier?
That's true. He's good. He is.
He's a treasure.
And no, so like him in that, and then I just like Bruce Willis at his, it's almost like a Dirty Harry type of attitude, just kind of doing whatever. Anyway,
Chris Rock in that movie is so
Ruby Rod. But I got to tell you, one of my favorite characters in that whole movie, he only has like 2 minutes or whatever, is the guy that's trying to rob him when he's in his apartment.
You like it? I don't need it. Take it.
Nice hat.
He reminds me of one of my old coworkers. Every time I see that, I'm like, that dude looks so much like Russ.
But if you hadn't seen that movie and you watched a trailer for it, you're like, this is going to be all over the place.
Yeah. It is all over the place, but it's delightful. It's all over the place in the best possible way.
So let's take this now and flip it upside down. What is a movie that you had really high expectations for that ended up being terrible? I'm going to kick us off here because it ruined my reputation amongst my group of friends for a very long time. This was before I knew either of you.
Is this the most hated movie of all time?
Yes.
It's a movie that doesn't exist, yet somehow I saw it in theaters.
Mm.
The Avatar movie.
Yeah.
By M. Night Shyamalan.
That's got to be one of the most disappointing movies of all time.
So bad.
So when I watched we're going to go on a little history lesson really quick. First time I watched a little bit of Avatar: The Last Bender, the animated series, was during the finale when they were coming out on Nickelodeon. and I was flipping through channels with Parker, who's been a fan of the show, and I just saw, I was like, what is this? It was in that final fight with Zuko and Azula, where it's like Azula really zoomed out and they're
which is one of the throwing best finales their fire. Of all time.
Oh yeah. And I'm just sitting here, I was like, I might have to watch this, you know, this series.
Yeah.
And I started watching it and I was like, everybody needs to see this. Like, that series touched my soul.
Yeah, it was so good.
So when the live action movie came out, and in my head, when I think of M. Night Shyamalan, I think of like The Village.
He's a great
which
director.
Which is enjoyable.
Yeah.
You have The Sixth Sense. Signs. Like, those are good. But then you have some other weird ones where I think his spiel, his gimmick just didn't work for him.
Lady sure. in the Water.
And or there's that like devil one where they're stuck in an elevator the whole movie. It's like,
oh yeah,
it's like he has ideas but couldn't deliver on some of them. But like the Unbreakable series,
oh so good,
so good. Split,
yeah.
Anyway, so I'm like, okay, this is gonna be good. M. Night Shyamalan's done some really good movies. It's a great story. How could it go wrong? Oh my gosh. Literally the worst movie. I grabbed a whole big giant group of friends, probably about 20 of us, because we're like, hey, let's all go to a movie together. And I made them go to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
My reputation was charred for life.
Yeah, it would be.
No, I'll tell you, I have the opposite experience with that same movie, because there were some people at work that knew that movie was coming out and I had never seen the cartoon. And they were like, oh, you have to go. It's the coolest thing. And I was like, how cool can it possibly
be? You were on the other side.
Right. I was on the opposite side. And I walked out of that movie. I did not finish it. I left during the crescendo of action thinking this is the stupidest thing anybody's ever done. And here's what it robbed me of. I wouldn't watch the cartoon after that because the movie was so bad.
Yeah.
It deprived me of the joy of that cartoon for like 5 more years. Mm-hmm. The only reason why I ever saw it is because my wife had to have her knee replaced and she was in a drugged out state and I got tired of picking things to watch. And so I picked it to put on in the background, and after 3 episodes, we were both all in. It's the only reason why I ever saw it. It's one of my favorite fandoms. That movie almost ruined it for me forever.
That is insane. Because cut to now, to where all of us three went to a concert where they played the Avatar music and all we sang together along, about the secret tunnel.
And we all cried.
It was amazing.
You know?
It was very...
Anyway.
Spectacular.
I mean, we probably can't get a better
example
as that.
That could be the most disappointing movie of all time.
What other ones do we got here?
I have one. So my wife was off on a work trip doing the stuff that she does. And I was home alone and I was like, what should I watch? Let me look at some movies. And then I was like, you know, I should watch some of the core movies. You know, the movies that really inspired people to do other things. And I was like, there's this 2021 Space Odyssey.
Oh my gosh.
2001
Space Odyssey. And so I watched it. And in the beginning, I was like, this is a little weird. And then it got to the space bit. And I was like, visually, this is amazing, but it's really slow. It's got to pick up. And then it went clear out with the space baby. And I was like, and then it ended. And I was like, that is what everybody talks about as like one of the best movies ever. That was so disappointing.
Do you know what makes that movie so annoying? Is if you don't enjoy it, you feel stupid because you think certainly there's something going on here that I just don't understand. Clearly I'm not intelligent enough for this level of high art. No, there's nothing there. It's just weird and it doesn't make sense. It is really slow. And the only reason why it was ever any good is because it's pre-Star Wars.
It was beautiful.
If it had been like put out post-Star Wars, no one would care about that movie at all.
The special effects the practical effects that they did with the way that people could walk around and everything, incredible. The set designs, the costumes, all incredible. Visually, amazing. Impeccable. Can't fault it. But story-wise, just weird.
And that's why
and slow.
I think that at the root of what a movie is, it's a storytelling, right?
Yeah.
And that's, okay, this is totally a tangent, but it's why I think Nintendo does so well in the world of PlayStation 5s and really powerful PCs.
Tell better stories. Because
the Nintendo is significantly underpowered, and yet the experience that you have can be just as enjoyable because of the storytelling and the way they utilize what they have.
They're Breath of the Wild. Such a good story.
Yeah, but back on movies.
I pulled out Wii Bowling. the other day for some young men who had come over to my house for an activity, and it still plays.
Yeah.
That's how many years later? It's awful hardware. I've got a little upscaler on my Wii that kind of tries to up it to 1080, and it's still awful graphics. It doesn't matter. That game still plays. It's still fun.
Yeah. Archery.
John Paul, do you have a movie that you had high expectations for that fell beneath your standards?
There's so many of them. I'd probably get in trouble.
Oh, you've got high standards, huh?
there's a couple of them that'll probably get me in trouble.
Solo. One I feel like that, all of us going into that one, we thought
I
it was going
to be. I don't mind that movie.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It's not great.
I had
but
low
I,
expectations.
I, yeah. Oh, I went in thinking it was going to be amazing, and it was still fun,
it's
but it
okay.
wasn't.
It's okay. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
the third.
Okay. This one's a little bit more complicated. The original Starship Troopers movie, I don't like. And I'll tell you why. Because at the time, I grew up in a culture where it was very taboo for people my age to watch R-rated movies. And it was an R-rated movie. And at the time, I was a huge Battletech nerd. I loved playing Battletech and other similar board top games. And it looked like the perfect piece of sci-fi. I was like, this is my dreams come to life. It's going to be fantastic. And I kind of sold myself out a little bit and snuck out to go see that R-rated movie and everything. And I hated it. It was so dumb. I just didn't like anything about it.
Fun story with that
stupid
same movie.
Stupid movie.
I accidentally watched it when I was like 12. Mm-hmm. We were like it was on TV late night and we were like, oh, what's this? And it wasn't edited. It was just the full movie. Like, whoa. And
just nobody cared.
Yeah.
Another really, you guys have never seen this movie, guaranteed. But like I said, I was a Battletech nerd growing up. They made a movie that was a Battletech adaptation. It was like a Timu adaptation of
like a
Battletech.
Knockoff.
It's like a pre-early Pacific Rim kind of giant fighting robot movie. And I was so excited for this movie, and I waited for weeks for it to come out to theaters. I talked my parents into buying tickets, which we did not do often, and I was going to go see this movie when it came out. I'd saved up allowance money to go do it. I never got to see it in theaters because it was booed out of the theater on its premiere. It was in theaters for one half of one day in half of the United States. It was so bad.
Wow.
It's called Robot Jocks.
Can you find it on like YouTube or anything?
It would be interesting if anybody wants to see an objectively horrible movie.
I'm down.
Robot Jocks. I found it on VHS.
Wow.
Several years later, I was like, finally, I'm going to get to see Robot Jocks. And I watched and I was like, oh my gosh, how did anybody even spend 5 minutes on this movie? It's so bad.
Do you
remember Mystery Science Theater?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where they would love that movie.
Their whole thing is about commentary on terrible movies. So one for me that my wife and I watched the other day was the Jack Black, Paul Rudd, Anaconda remake that, you know, the whole premise is
They're trying to remake the original Anaconda.
It was the dumbest movie I've ever seen. I thought it would be dumb, but I thought it'd be funny dumb.
And it wasn't.
It was just dumb. Like, so, I don't even think you could enjoy that movie being high.
That's saying a lot.
Apparently that movie, I just looked it up. It was made with an extremely low budget.
Yeah, I know. And I was super excited for it, and it was awful.
I mean,
yeah. That was very disappointing.
Low budget doesn't mean much.
It doesn't have to be bad.
It's from 1989. Okay. Like back then, low budget did not.
You know what a low budget movie that did fantastic that I love?
Mm.
Nacho Libre. Napoleon Dynamite. Those
movie,
budgets are tiny.
Nacho Libre will go down in history as one of the greatest movies of all time. It's so quotable. You can drop a Nacho Libre quote anywhere in a public space and someone else will echo it.
Oh, for sure.
It's so well known. It's so quotable.
Yeah.
I love that movie. That's the best road trip movie ever because when you're driving in a car and you want something to kill the time, we do movies that we know so well that we won't be tempted to watch them, but we can listen to them. You can listen to that movie and visualize the whole thing and it's fine while you're driving. It's a fantastic
That might
movie.
Be another good question. What's a movie you could listen to without watching and still enjoy?
Nacho's one. I have several that are good ones that fall into that category. Another one that I can listen to but not watch is History of the Future Folk.
Oh.
That's music heavy already.
It's a music heavy movie, but it works beautifully for that.
Oh, we need a copy of that. I don't even know if you can pick that up anymore.
I have a DVD copy of that.
Yeah.
Physical media, people.
Space worms, man. Grew up on a planet farming space worms.
To our listeners, if anybody has not seen History of the Future, folk, do yourself a favor. That's a super, super, super low budget movie. And it's fantastic.
It's fun.
It just hits all the right notes. It's delightful. Just don't take it too seriously. Hondo.
Hondo. So it's vacation time. What are your top three best vacation spots?
For summer vacations?
Yeah. Anywhere.
Summer vacation. I love the beach.
Yep.
Just any beach.
And beaches generally are temperate weather-wise, heat-wise. So that's definitely very high on my list.
The beach in the heat of summer is peak beach.
Yeah.
Sure.
Disney.
Really?
I prefer Disney in the fall or the spring.
I loathe Disney in the summer.
I will take Disney anytime I can get it.
It's too hot.
I would agree that I prefer like fall, like what do they call it? The Halloween time, the boo.
Sure.
Christmas is actually my favorite time in right around the winter, but it's still like fall weather. But in terms of like summer, give me a beach, give me mountains.
Sure. Camping or in the mountains.
Like a lake, something like that.
Park City's pretty fun. In the summer.
Up in the mountains. Yeah. Or up at sure. elevation. Yeah, sure. Alaska was fantastic.
I'll find that out.
That's the only time to visit Alaska. I think Alaska is off my list any other time of the year, August or July.
Yeah, I agree with that. But if you were to say, like, you have one choice of summer, what can you do? And I could go anywhere that I want. It's somewhere with a beach.
I go to the beach. I'm with you. I love the beach. I love peak summer beach, except nice hot beach.
Except we have to stop and get boogie boards first.
Yep.
I love boogie boarding.
And then snap them in the waves.
I could literally boogie board for a week and not get tired of it. I love it so much. And it's so rare for me anymore to get to a beach when it's warm enough to actually comfortably boogie board. I feel like all my beach excursions, the weather's been terrible. Like, I was even in South Carolina recently, and it was unseasonably cold down there, and the ocean was just not inviting. And it made me sad.
What about you, Eric? You just Disney?
Yeah, Disney. I like Disney a lot.
I did something fun at Disneyland this last time, and I would highly recommend it to anybody who's gone. We recently went. I put a list on my phone of random questions to ask strangers in line. That was a lot of fun.
So... all real quick.
I would hate that.
Yeah.
No, it was great.
I would come and go. I'd have to, if I was feeling up for it, that would be a lot of fun. But if I get past my burnout stage, I'd be like, this is the worst thing ever.
I probably wouldn't respond. Just the guy I am.
Yeah, but reading your face, I'd know better than to ask you.
Yeah, that's fair. The reason why I like Disneyland, I have a really young kid. I have a kid that's pretty adventurous. Then there was my wife and I that are up for anything. It's a place that I can go and know that all of us can have fun.
You mean like Walt Disney originally intended?
Yeah. Whereas like if we go to, I don't know, like the beach, my
kids are done after a couple hours.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. No, I totally get that.
I get that.
That's a very practical answer, Eric. My answer was at my own consideration.
Yeah,
I wasn't thinking about anybody else there.
The problem with me is I get stressed when if I'm doing something and I know someone's unhappy, I can't get past
that. That's totally fair. Now, if I'm talking about family vacation, that does slightly skew how I would approach it. And I probably would.
That's true because my wife and I are a perfect example of this because I love heat. I'll take any amount of heat. And so I'm going to pick beach in the summertime because the ocean's there and it's great, but I can be on the sand and it's not going to kill me. My wife, on the other hand, breaks out in hives. She just can't do the sun for any amount of time. So while she loves the beach, my guess is her druthers would be she would prefer camping to beaching. Yeah, I would prefer beaching to camping. And so we go to the beach when we can. We're obviously, we live super far from it, so that's not a hard thing, but we camp way more than we beach. And but I think
if, of those things, it's like, yes, if I had my druthers, but if someone said, oh, darn it, you have to go camping, I'm not going to complain.
I'm all in. I enjoy it. So we just kind of compromise on that.
No, that's
one.
Fair.
I love camping. Particularly, I love camping. I love low-key camping. Like, I can take my Kindle camping and just find a chair, put a bug net around myself so the insects leave me alone, and do nothing for 3 days, and it's fantastic.
Yep. On the opposite of this, what's your place that's you feel like is just overrated that everybody loves?
Disneyland in the summer.
Ouch.
Don't get me wrong. You guys know me very well. I love Disneyland, and I've gone many, many times with my family, and we, you know, whenever we talk about vacations, it's always up for consideration,
mm-hmm.
but the summer is just, it's an ex-nay for a while.
I have to go back. I would, if I was to repick a place that was my favorite vacation that I think I've done, at least recently, our San Diego trip was incredible.
Gosh, that was a good trip.
And again, San Diego is close enough to the coast that it's temperate, and there's enough to do around that it was a lot of fun.
And we got to go do Torrey Pines, and it was incredible.
So I would not call San Diego overrated. We're talking about what you think is overrated.
No. I was going back.
But I'm saying now when you flipped it,
I'm going to poke Eric where it hurts, because I've been to what I think is the most overrated tourist spot on planet Earth. I hate Paris so much. I hate Paris. Every stereotype that you've ever heard about Paris is 100% true. It's an awful place. I was there for 8 hours, and it was 7 hours too long.
Oh gosh, go to the Louvre. Oh wow. My gosh, go to the museums.
That is a hot take.
Yeah, I'll fight you on that all day. It has the best museums in the world.
Can you give me a nutshell of what was so bad? Do you guys ever watch
Don't go there in the summer.
Do you guys ever watch The Simpsons?
Go there in the off season, and it's incredible. It's beautiful.
You guys have seen several episodes of The Simpsons.
Yes.
Remember when he takes his family to New York, and he's trying to get his car back that got booted? Yeah. And
on the cacklash.
Yeah, and Marge and Lisa go and have a fantastic time and do all these sightseeing and ride on the horse and buggy and have a great time. And Homer's like, I hate New York City. It's terrible. And all these bad things happen to him.
Here's the deal, though.
You have to go there for a little while.
I have traveled the earth. I'm not an untraveled person, and I'm used to chaos. Like, I can go into some big cities and be okay. And it's a little bit stressful, like with public transportation and everything of that nature. I was expecting Paris to be much cleaner than it was. It isn't. It's filthy. It is disgustingly filthy. And you don't have a choice. There's no other way to get around. You're in the subways down there if you're doing it. And the subways are objectively terrifying in Paris.
You can go above ground. There's buses everywhere.
The thing that bothered me more about Paris than any other thing is that I can see not loving tourists. I can see that, okay? If you live someplace and it gets wiped out by tourists, I can see being resentful of that. Paris relies on tourism. It is their number one industry, and they hate tourists. Yep. Like, the derision of how dare a foreigner be in my city. Like, unbelievable. Oh, my gosh.
It's not anybody.
It's just John Paul.
It's American.
It's just American. But you can feel that. And like, yeah, I couldn't get directions from anybody.
They don't hate me.
I couldn't get help because you speak French.
Yeah. If you try and speak French, like, show them that you've actually learned, they will be nice to you.
I'm not going to learn French afternoon in Paris.
If I was traveling over to Europe, I would put like a Canadian flag on my backpack.
You're not wrong. But this is before all of that, okay?
But
I hate it.
If I go to any country, I am going to try and learn a little bit of their language to communicate.
Sure.
And that's all you need to do.
It's funny you say that, because there's a whole bunch of videos of people like going to France and trying to use their French to order like a baguette or something. And they say, like, every time the conversation goes, like, I tell them in my broken French, and then they just look at me and be like, and they speak in perfect English and ask if I want the thing.
Yeah, they all speak English.
They do all speak English. It was possibly just a me experience, but
it was.
I had a horrible, horrible day in Paris, and I would never go back.
Did you get any good patisserie while you were there?
I had a croissant and it was okay. And I was expecting it to be better than okay.
How does it compare to my croissants?
Nothing. Nothing. Your croissants are 1,000 times better than the croissant.
That's what I wanted to hear.
We need to go again. I will take you to some good patisseries. I will take you to the museums, and then we'll go to the Normandy D-Day
beaches.
I was going
to tell you about this because I have a friend at work who actually told me that he's a funny guy, but he's like off the cuff in the middle of a conversation that had nothing to do with. He's like, have you ever looked at a chateau? And I was like, what? He's castle. Like, you should look at a French chateau. Like they're the shockingly inexpensive. And I was like, your definition of inexpensive and my definition of inexpensive must be wildly different. He's like, no, go look. You should get a chateau. So I went home to Rachel and I was like, hey, this guy says we need to look at a chateau. And he's like, and she was like, we're not looking at a chateau unless Eric and his wife want to buy it with us. And we can go and share the chateau with them.
Okay.
We're not going to France without a French speaker.
Well, look into it. Let me know.
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
Birdie Bev, Birdie Bev,
time for another Birdie Bev. What are we going
to
do
this
for
week's Birdie Bev is brought to you by...
Spreacher?
I always announced it Sprecher.
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 This is a Sprecher maple root beer.
We will have to see if it tastes German.
So Sprecher makes a normal root beer, mm-hmm. but this maple one apparently is pretty well loved in the
community. No, no,
no.
It's the flavor of the month. Maple nut crunch.
This is a non-diet root beer, John Paul, so take it easy.
Take it easy.
This comes to you all the way from Wisconsin.
What? I was expecting it to be German.
It says it's fire brewed on the label.
Fire brewed?
Yeah, apparently. Okay. We don't have any pencils and paper, so you guys are just going to have to remember your number. And I think I got mine.
I'm ready.
Eric's contemplating.
Go for it.
I'll start. I'm probably lower than you guys. I'll bet you rank this high. I gave it a 7.5.
I gave it a 7.5.
It's a solid root beer. It's good. It's got a nice flavor.
I think this one in the bottle has lost a little of its carbonation.
Mm.
What's your score, Eric?
I was a 7.5.
Were you?
Well. Yeah.
Across the board.
Wow.
I drank it and I was like, I really enjoy that. It's not an 8.
No.
It's not an 8. It's a 7.5 though.
It has a little odd aftertaste as well.
It's almost got like a vinegar finish.
Yeah.
Just a titch like acidic.
I will say I like this. So it comes with carbonated water. Who would have thought? Glucose syrup, but then maple syrup.
There you go.
And
the maple gives it a smoothness.
It's smooth.
And then the flavors, sodium benzoate, then citric acid.
I was worried when you said it was a maple root beer that it would be too sweet. And I know it's stupid to say a root beer being too sweet. They're all sweet.
Oh, no, there's definitely
But there are some that are like clawingly sweet. And I kind of expected that with the maple kind of brand on this. And it isn't. It's smooth, but it's not crazy.
Yeah. It's like, have you ever had like the Harry Potter, like I can't remember which company makes
the butter
them,
beers,
but the butter beers,
I can't do it. It's so much. It's just sweet.
Yeah. And that's not what I don't think that's how they taste.
I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that at a party. That's a good party root beer. Good Saturday barbecue root beer. It's not one I would go out of my way to
This
obtain.
Is one that you pull out on July 1st for Canada Day.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of days later, what do you pull out for the 4th of July?
No. So you want to drink a Wisconsin root beer with a German label for Canada Day because it's got a maple leaf on the cover.
Yeah, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I knew you were French, so I put together this French meal with French fries and French dressing. And
French deep.
Happy Canada Day. Have this American root beer with a German label and a maple leaf.
I want my $2. Now, okay, that movie, it came out, I think, before I was even born.
Oh, yeah.
Movie? Better Off Dead.
Better Off Dead.
But
it's a skiing movie.
That movie falls under... better than I was expecting going into it.
Really? Because my wife made me watch that movie. She loved it as a kid. She quotes
dumb.
It all the time. And I think I was too old when I saw it. I don't appreciate it
as much. It's dumb.
But she quotes it all the time. So
yeah. It's one of those movies that has grown, I guess, in our household quotable over the years.
That was a tasty birdie bev. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I have some news. My wife and I and my family are moving at the end of this month. So for the next little while, at least, I will not be on the podcast as we get settled into our new house. We will not be moving close either. We're going to be moving up to Washington. So I will be joining remotely, but yep. So yeah, John Paul and Cody will be continuing the podcast while I get settled in, and then I'll join when I can.
Our listeners cannot see the look of total dejection and devastation on
the
our faces. The
tone just shifted in the room.
They've known about it for quite some time.
I know, and we still...
We don't like talking about it.
We're still not over it, man. We're not going to be over it for a long time.
Yeah.
I wish you the very, very best, and I hope that you find good friends.
No,
while
I hope
up
it's
there.
Terrible, and he has to move back because he doesn't like living there.
No, I want him. I want him to be happy.
That won't happen.
But pragmatically speaking, you're never going to find friends as cool as we are. You just aren't. It's just a disappointing thing. But we'll look forward to seeing you when we can. Now, that having been said, as this is a golf podcast, I have talked with you a little bit about this off air, but we are not letting you off the hook. We'll maintain a handicap. We will get updates from you. You are going to continue the game of golf.
Yep.
And we, when we get together, we'll try and squeeze in around when we go up to you or when you come down to us. And even if that's in the winter months, apparently it doesn't snow in Utah anymore. So we'll still catch a round.
How weird is that? We could have golfed
on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I kept thinking, you know, today's a good day. I should just go. And then I didn't.
Our course was closed for grass problems, but it was closed for snow maybe 5 days this winter.
So you want to know something funny? I actually called and booked a tee time. And then the next day they announced they were closing the course.
For the grass.
For the grass. And they canceled my tee time. I was like, ugh.
Yeah. You will be very missed, Eric. We'll still have you on we'll still make this work. There's so many unknowns that we don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. Yep. We'll work it out.
We'll figure it out.
And who knows? Maybe we'll add some video feeds and people can watch us on stuff that has video feeds. Who knows?
But we will miss you greatly. So,
mutual. Feeling is mutual.
Well, I think that wraps us up for this edition of For the Record, and some highs, some lows.
Mm.
But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll have to catch you next time. Tune in next episode of For the Record as we talk about how John Paul and Cody kill each other in Eric's absence.
Yeah. How we both struggled not to be overcompetitive on the course and without the mediating factor of Eric fail miserably.
Well, because I like to sit there and look at the birds. I do so much for the game.
You
look
do.
At that bird. Look at the view.
You underestimate your influence. Oh,
John Paul and I.
On a final note, though, I do want to put in one plug as we close out. I put in a plug every week for Links and Legends.
Yes.
And the importance of people getting on and playing that. But we did a Links and Legends group challenge today. Where we scrambled our course, and we were successful. We did this earlier in the season. We missed it by 2 strokes, I believe. But today, we vanquished the course in a 3-man scramble. We shot even par, and it was a fun time. Enjoyed it a great deal.
Great.
Took a decent number of shots from everybody.
Not only are there individual challenges inside Links and Legends, which is available for free at quest.foretherecord.com, quest.foretherecord.com, but if you create a circle with your friends, there's circle challenges that you guys can tackle together.
And we did, and we won. Hooray for us.
We are victorious.
Remember to like, comment, and subscribe.
So there you have it, folks. Eric is moving away. He and I have lived less than a block apart for over 15 years. We spent many nights a week together. His family is my family, and vice versa. And the news of his leaving hit me harder than I thought that it would. At the time of this recording, he's been gone for about 2 weeks, and there's an emptiness in my home and in my life, and truthfully, an emptiness in my golf game. Now, he hasn't passed away. I can still talk to him on the phone. I can still see him online.
but it's just somehow different. And I'm sure that we'll recover from it and that the podcast will go on. And hopefully we can keep him golfing and his handicap will lower while he's away in Washington. And we will continue to golf here and find joy in the game. But for the time being, we're in a bit of a slump. And I think given the circumstance, that's probably okay. We'll see you next time.